on 774 ABC Melbourne. You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Your Tom Hanks texts are coming in thick and fast already. I'll read this one out. A bit of a language warning. This is from Dave. I know it's wrong, but I have a soft spot for Bachelor Party. It came out when I was 13 and it ticked all the boxes, those being crassness and boobs. But that, I look, you know, I'm going to allow that one through, Dave, because you see those films when you're 11, 12, 13, and they make, create an impression. Josh Nelson is with me. Welcome, Josh.
I, too, enjoyed Bachelor Party as a 13-year-old.
Look, I still enjoy Risky Business, and yet it is so ethically flawed, that film, fundamentally ethically flawed. But because I saw it when I was 12 or 13, and look, I can't stand a lot of Tom Cruise, but there's something about that film that grabs me. We will talk Tom Hanks. You can check out Josh Nilsson's blog, filmology.com, spelt with a PH, 1300-222-774. Your best Tom Hanks film, your worst. Just what you think about him. And let's have the Cloud Atlas conversations. Yee-haw. That's grist for the mill. But let's talk about Captain Phillips first. Josh, I think I've mentioned a few times the Paul Greengrass film, United 93. That's what it's called, isn't it?
It is, yep.
I remember reading a great review, the Peter Bradshaw one, that said after watching United 93, he had to go into a quiet room, darkened room, and lie down on the floor and just take a few breaths because it was so tension-inducing. Same director. Similar thing, a real-life story. Tell us the setup.
Well, it is incredibly tense, and yeah, as you mentioned, it is based on a true story. 2009, Captain Richard Phillips, who's a commercial shipping liner captain off Africa, and yeah, as you mentioned before, the ship that he's in charge of is hijacked by a small group of Somali pirates, which then leads to him being kidnapped through a series of incidents on a lifeboat. And then as the true story and the narrative of the film unfold, we get the intervention by the US Navy among various other groups.
And does it have he also did two of those great Bourne flicks.
Yeah, Supremacy and Bourne Ultimatum. I think it was the second and the third one.
Yeah. So does it have that dramatic, urgent feel those films in United 93 have?
Yeah, you can tell it's got all of the hallmarks of the Greengrass narrative. Even his more recent film, Green Zone, that he did with Matt Damon.
Of course, yeah,
so
right.
So he has a definite style, and one of, I guess, his key stylistic approaches is the handheld camera,
and
I think I think he's interested in that. Is his interest in the handheld camera, which David Stratton probably hates, given he's known for that, is part of that immediacy, and I think he uses it to good effect. Not just as a sort of a stylistic quirk. It's actually something that he uses to get involved in the inside with his characters, like he does on the plane with United 93, and also in the very kind of claustrophobic spaces of Captain Phillips. This is an incredibly tense film, and it's a film that goes for over 2 hours. And normally with these types of films, there's always that tension at the beginning, and then it starts to sort of taper off as the film goes on. This actually works in the reverse. The start is a bit limp, and then it just gets more and more tense, and there's a great sort of payoff in the final sort of act or 15 minutes of the film.
Let's just have a little listen to Tom Hanks talking about the authenticity of the film, and especially the Somali nature of it. This is Tom Hanks speaking to the BBC.
Well, that was a great thing that Paul brought to it, the concept of our global economic force that puts these ships with all these luxury goods or just the staples of life right off the coast of this place where utter chaos has been reigning for a long time. Somalia, or this part of Somalia, is a hopeless, corrupt place of famine and desperation. And that, I think, alters not let's allow these pirates then to do the things they do. It doesn't do that, but it does give us an understanding that there is a danger to the desperation of these fellows. It was funny, seeing the film, I was finally able to read the subtitles of what they were saying in Somali, and it was quite astounding to me that, you know, a couple of them were saying, let's get out of here, let's stop this, let's knock this off. I think it helps identify the solidity of the rock and the fierceness of the hard place that they are behind, and that actually helps the movie. It helps tell the story, and it helps examine the theme.
I've got to say, if you have your doubts about Tom Hanks as a serious and clever person, Front Row is a BBC Radio 4 podcast. He gave that interview to that show. He's really quite impressive. So two things about that, Josh. Does it convey well the pirates' point of view?
Yes, it does. And that was my concern going in with these types of narratives, that they just kind of write the Somalis off as a sort of the evil, you know, foreign other who's the invading force and threatening our good white Americans. It doesn't do that for the most part. And I think that's a real plus. And I think Hanks is, I'm completely on board with what Hanks is saying there. And where it I think, improves, and again, it's the same thing with the tension, you become more sympathetic the longer the film goes on. Sometimes there's there's often an attempt, you know, a feeble attempt to kind of create some sort of sympathy at the beginning of the film, and by the end, they're the evil villains that you knew they were going to be.
Yes,
this actually works in reverse. And what I think is impressive is it doesn't just treat them all as one kind of amorphous mass of terrorists. You get to see the sort of the differences between the crew of the Somalis, you know, the sort of the young kid, the captain who sort of mirrors Tom Hanks, who's sort of, again, like he says, caught between a rock and a hard place, between his boss, his sort of, you know, warlord boss, and the job that he's on. And I think that's an important distinction. I think that's what really elevates this film above what it could have been, a very sort of dour, quite sort of xenophobic film in many ways.
And the idea that he did not know what they were saying in Somali while it was filmed. I mean, I don't know, watching the film, does it? It obviously feels very real.
Yeah, and it's a really impressive performance. I think there's a tendency with some Hanks and the audience's response to him to think, oh, he just switches into autopilot and he's the same in every film. There's something different about Tom Hanks's performance in this, and it has, particularly at the end of the film, there's something quite remarkable at the final couple of scenes that we see him. That's really impressive. I think the other interesting thing is we talked about a hijacking film less than a month ago, I think, maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago, the Danish film called A Hijacking, which was interesting because in that film they didn't subtitle the Somali pirates. So you get a very different kind of perspective, and both these films are interesting. That film was really more about hostage negotiations and the business side of terrorism, and this one's far more the sort of the action tension-driven, you know, will he survive or won't he?
Yeah.
And even though you know it's a real story and you know the outcome, the gift of this film and what makes it impressive is the fact that it still kind of drags you along on the ride.
Captain Phillips is the film. It's got Tom Hanks in it. I'm going to get to your texts and your calls on Tom Hanks. 1300-222-774 is the phone number. Is it Harsh has called from the city? Hi there, Harsh.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. What you saw the film, is that right?
Oh, yes, I saw the film and I really enjoyed it. I found this to be one of his best movies, mainly because I used to be a sea captain.
Right.
And I could relate and relate to the movie, and I could understand. And technically also, I found the movie to be very nicely and properly made. And I'm also thankful because this has finally raised the issue of piracy, which we seafarers have faced for such a long time.
Yeah.
But nobody was any wiser. Nobody was aware of exactly what was going on.
Yeah, but look, I remember trying to do stories on piracy actually in the late 90s and trying to interview people just like you. So at least I've got through to you sort of 12 or 13 years later. Tell me, where were you a ship's captain, and how close did you get to having pirates coming on board?
Well, I used to be a ship captain of the large bulk carriers, and I used to be visiting Australia. And I used to pass through the pirate waters of the Malacca Straits and the Singapore Straits. So those days when we were passing, we used to be awake for 36, 48 hours to make sure that everything was all right.
Right.
Although I never had any incident of being actually attacked or even approached by the pirates. But it was a pretty intense and a pretty serious and a very nerve-wracking time passing through those waters.
Okay. Look, fantastic, Harsh. Thank you for calling. I'm glad to hear you say, too, that it was technically accurate. Let me just read a few texts. Is Captain Phillips originally written by the same guy who wrote the book Zero Dark Thirty? I believe he was involved in the shooting of Osama bin Laden and the rescue of Captain Phillips. There is someone with some military involvement with Zero Dark Thirty, wasn't there? Do you know the answer to that one, Josh?
I don't think it's the same screenwriter. This is actually based on a book which was co-written by Captain Phillips called A Captain's Courage,
right,
which is just part of the source material. Apparently they interviewed all but one of the other crew members on board the boat.
Right. Look, 1300-222-774, your Tom Hanks flicks. Hi, Raph. I love Hanks in Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. I didn't realise he was in that. Apollo 13 and In a League of Their Own. And the chopsticks scene from Big. Yeah, we all love that. Absolutely, I love that. The best Tom Hanks film, this text says, will always be Toy Story. I saw it when I was 5 years old and it blew my mind. I can't hear his voice without thinking Woody. Absolutely. And he was asked about Toy Story 4 and he said, yes, he'd love to, but no one's approached him from memory. Rob's called from, is it Bullingarook?
That's right.
What your favourite or your worst Tom Hanks flick?
Saving Private Ryan's the favourite.
Yeah, that's actually really good, isn't it?
I can't see how anyone wouldn't like Forrest Gump.
Well, I've never been able to finish it, Rob. I couldn't finish it.
The music is enough to get it through just by that alone.
Nah, look, well, we'll have to disagree on that one, Rob, but thank you. And Kevin's called from Geelong. Hey, Kevin.
Raph,
yes.
Just a quick one. Toy Story 4 is on IMDb, so they must be talking about it.
I'm not so... I don't know, Kevin.
If it's on the internet, it has to be true.
No, sorry. Philadelphia, for the worst hands down.
Oh, yeah, okay. I didn't like Philadelphia either, yes.
Best, easy, Cast Away. We were talking about Helen Hunt a couple of
the
weeks ago.
The best is Cast Away.
Cast Away. It's brilliant.
Mm. Yeah, the performance by Wilson is amazing.
No. And his other top of the charts for me, that'd be Toy Story 2 with the best song ever.
That's the really bad bit of Toy Story 2, isn't it, the song? No.
It's the best sequel of all time.
It is the best sequel of all time. Heartily agree. But that song that the female cowboy character sings, I've forgotten her name, that's the worst bit of the film.
Me, and it won a Song of the Year at the Academy Awards.
That's terrible, that song.
It's perfect.
Okay, Kevin, we'll agree to disagree. Let's have a little listen to
Godfather
Castaway.
I think Godfather 2 just phoned to say sorry. Hey,
Castaway.
I'm sorry, Wilson. Wilson, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Wilson! I can't! Wilson! Wilson!
Josh is almost choking on his water at that scene. Well, I'll just have to disagree with Kevin on that one. Someone else texting in, Andrew in Diamond Creek. Raffy, The Terminal is our favourite Tom Hanks movie. I haven't seen that. Josh is saying no, he doesn't like it. Tom Hanks movie that I love, That Thing You Do. Liv Tyler shines under his direction. I haven't seen that.
He wrote
good?
And directed that as well, right. About a band in the 50s, sort of a Beatles rip-off
right.
band.
Good.
It's actually pretty good. I think it was his directorial debut. Yeah, right. He did pretty reasonable with it.
And what's the Steven Spielberg one where he's the investigator after Leonardo DiCaprio? Catch Me If You Can. He's quite good in that.
Yeah, he's very consistent. He reminds me of that older style studio actor, like a Henry Fonda type,
who's sort of do anything.
Consistent, you know, he's prolific, and when he plays against type on the rare occasion, he's actually really good at it.
He's never done the Hugh Jackman turn, though, has he, and sort of played the murderer type, or the Robin, because even Robin Williams has done that.
He's never gone full evil.
That's right, he hasn't broken bad yet. Another text here, golly, I thought Philadelphia was good. Oh, we could do half an hour on why Philadelphia was bad, in my opinion, but we'll leave that for another time.
Do you want some Oscars trivia about Philadelphia and Forrest Gump? Only the second actor to win back-to-back Oscars. The other one was Spencer Tracy in 37-38. They were the same age for both of them.
Josh knows his trivia. And Sarah from Northcote's going to give us one that I think most people will agree with. Hi there, Sarah.
Hi, Raf.
What's yours?
Sleepless in Seattle, of course.
Yeah. How many times have you seen it?
Many. I'd say at least five.
Oh, five's nothing. I thought you were going to tell me 20 or 30. Yeah, no, look, he is pretty good in that. And
you know, his wife makes a cameo in one of the funniest scenes in the film.
Yeah, and wasn't he in, he did another Nora Ephron, You've Got Mail?
You've Got Mail with Meg Ryan again.
But that wasn't so good.
Not as good.
No, not as
still
good.
Still very watchable.
Indeed. Look, thank you. And also quite a few of you texting in, nominating Big. He was terrific in Philadelphia. Oh, yeah, I'm copying it on text over not liking Philadelphia. Sorry. 1300-222-774, your favourite or worst Tom Hanks film? Look, John's texted in. I'll read out one. Raph is a gay man. I found Philadelphia wonderful. Sorry, John. Look, nothing wrong with the politics of it. I just found it remarkably inauthentic. Does that make me bad? Probably. And how can you go past Joe versus the volcano? Very, very easily is the answer to that question. Oh, someone's saying Road to Perdition, Tom Hanks plays a murderer.
I'm glad that someone mentioned that. Yeah,
is
he's
that
great.
Good? Haven't seen
yeah,
it.
He's the hitman for Paul Newman, who's the mob boss.
Yeah,
and then
right.
Has to sort of go out alone and because they're going to kill his son.
Does he do good evil?
Well, he doesn't go full evil. He's still sort of the benevolent hitman, if you can be that. Okay. Jude Law goes full evil in that one, and that's really impressive.
I don't mind Jude Law. Look, seeing as we're talking Forrest Gump, seeing as people loved Forrest Gump so much, me personally, I couldn't finish it, but have a little listen.
Do you want a chocolate? I could eat about 1.5 million of these. My mom always said life was like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
Yeah, it's not for me, but let me know. 1300-222-774. The text, of course, is 0437-774-774.
You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
I'm still getting texts saying Tom Hanks was in When Harry Met Sally, which I'm sure isn't right, but hey, I'm open to correction. And best Tom Hanks movie ever, Money Pit? Awesome movie. Best bathtub scene ever. Didn't see that. That's from Alex Stuck in the traffic.
Shelley Long is in that as well.
Right?
Yeah, great.
There you go. And so finally, someone has texted in this one. Surely you would nominate this as one of Tom Hanks' best, The Green Mile.
When I stand before God and he asks me, why did I did I kill one of his true miracles? What am I going to say? That it was my job. It's my job.
You tell God the Father it was a kindness you done. I know you're hurting in word. I can feel it on you.
Yeah, and it's one of those films like Shawshank Redemption. You can turn it on any Saturday night, and if it's on, you'll actually go, oh yeah, that bit, and that bit, and that bit, and it sucks you all the way through. I want to mention another film, Josh Blankenjewes.
Yeah, I think that's how it's pronounced.
Okay, yeah. What does it mean?
Possibly Snow White, which would make sense because it's an adaptation of Snow White.
Blank White. Okay, Snow White. Got it. Yes.
Yep, is Nieves Snow, maybe? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. It's the third, speaking of films that come in multiples, it's the third Snow White adaptation we've had in the last 12 to 18 months after, I think we had Mirror Mirror last year, Snow White and the Huntsman. This is very different. So this is stylistically...
Better be different to Snow White and the Huntsman.
I quite like that. If you
that was okay.
Yeah, Mirror Mirror was the one that I thought was the dud, apart from the costuming. Let's get back on track. This is in the style of The Artist, so a silent style film, but with a sort of a contemporary spin and a contemporary polish. The interesting thing about this, so it's the Snow White tale, but it's done in the context of 1920s and bullfighting. So the father, Snow White's father, and this is a famous matador who's sort of, you know, mortally wounded. The evil stepmother takes over, and then the young girl decides that she's
That's
going to, be, to rise, to become the matador, to get her revenge. And she meets a group of, I think, five or six dwarfs, which is never really explained. So maybe it's a Spanish joke that they couldn't find two extra to fill out the seven. That's quite unsure. But this is a really beautiful film.
Okay.
It's sort of a novelty. Apparently, when the director, this is hearsay, but you know it's a good story. When the director Pablo Berger heard about The Artist, apparently he was at Cannes, and he stormed out of the screening because he realized that it was going to sort of steal all his thunder.
So it is silent?
It is silent. So it's one of those ones that intercuts the title cards. Mm. It tells most of the story through the performance. So it's very sort of melodramatic, and the music, which is beautiful, and stunning visuals. Like in terms of visual composition, this is, you know, kind of a masterclass for cinema. And it's in that 1:33:1 or 4:3 screen ratio. So it's in that sort of older style.
Okay, so less letterbox,
indeed.
More TV, so old-fashioned TV style.
One of the actresses that people might recognise from this, and she plays the evil stepmother, is Maribel Verdú. I'm not sure if I pronounced that correctly, but she was the star of Y Tu Mamá También and Pan's Labyrinth. And she's really impressive in the role. And so is the lead actress who plays the elder Snow White. Yeah, this is a really fun film. It's, you know, I saw this at MIFF, and I saw this amid various sort of quite heavy-handed documentaries and dramas, and it was the perfect relief. So I really sort of relished that break. So if you're in the mood for something that's not as heavy-handed, perhaps, as Captain Phillips, you know, 2 hours plus of tension, this is a really wonderful, wonderful relief. It's really fun.
Just say the title again.
Blankenjewes.
Blankenjewes. And where's it on?
It's a limited release. You'll find it at places like the Nova, Como, Kino, and the Brighton Bay.
Okay, Blankenjewes. And yes, Harry Metzeli, you are right. Listeners wrong. I checked IMDb. They're confusing it with You've Got Mail. Yes, I thought so. The worst Tom Hanks film on this text has to be the Wachowski sci-fi. Yes, Cloud Atlas. Can't remember the name of the film, as I want to forget the time I wasted watching it. And g'day, Raff and all. You forgot Apollo 13, one of his best. Tom Hanks nails these great stories. You are right. Anthony's called from Mount Macedon. What are we forgetting, Anthony?
Well, this is a very, very obscure sitcom, which was way before Tom Hanks' movie career, in the early 80s, called Bosom Buddies, where he played a cross-dresser. Him and his friend had difficulty getting into college, so they had to get into a woman's college, so they dressed in drag. And
is that any good?
And it was disastrous.
Oh, right. Okay. Yes, it sounds terrible.
I don't know whether it's a Hollywood urban myth, but I heard something about that Tom Hanks was buying up everything to do with this film, with this sitcom.
Series. So no one could show it. Oh, that's okay. Well, we'll all remember to ignore Blossom Buddies.
Yeah, Tom Hanks has an interesting history on TV. I don't know if you can remember, but he was a supporting actor on Family Ties for a while. He was the brother of, I think it was the mother character, who was an alcoholic. And this popped up on TV when I was watching reruns about a year ago, and he's remarkable in it. He's quite stunning.
Someone says he has a bit part in Happy Days as a karate person against the Fonz. Worst, as a small part, as a karate man against Fonzie in Happy Days. Oh, yuck. I've never heard of it. Quite a few of you are texting in Da Vinci Code. Lady Killers? Lady Killers?
Yeah.
He plays a bad guy. I don't know that one. Do you know that one?
It's the remake of the film that starred Peter Sellers and Alec Guinness, I think.
Okay.
Coen Brothers did it. Yeah, actually, not one of their best.
Quite a few of you taking that one in. Worst Gump, best Cloud Atlas, best Cloud Atlas. You are in the minority of the texters, but I'm glad we're dividing, stoking the fires of fear, prejudice and envy around Tom Hanks. That's all because of Josh Nelson. Josh, thanks for coming in.
Pleasure.
So we were talking about Captain Phillips, which is on wide release, and Blankenjewis. You need to go to Kino, Palace, places like that to see Blankenjewis. You can check out Josh's blog at filmology.com.